So the this aliyah picks up from the previous aliyah of Vayelech, where the immediately previous pasuk, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe that he has to write Ashira Hazos and to teach the Jewish people. And the Shira is a reference variably to Hazinu, to the entire Torah. In that reference, it's the makor for the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. And the Rambam understands that that is actually because Hazinu can't be by itself, but really it's a mitzvah to write Hazinu, which maybe that'll be something we can comment a little bit on next week. But now just to get us into this aliyah, which is very brief in that sense, like last week's parsha, but has some pretty heavy concepts in it as well. So it begins, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chaf, Ki Avienu El Hadama Asher Nishbata Lavosav Zavas Chalav Udvash V'Ochal V'Sava V'Dashen Ufana Elohim Acherim V'Avodim V'Niatzuni V'Hefer's Brisi. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying that the time is going to come when, after I bring them into Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, that flows with milk and honey, and they will become full. They will become overfull, like we find other references in the Torah as well. Then they're going to turn to other gods and serve them and provoke God, and they're going to be made for the bris. They're going to break the covenant. So a pretty downer of an opening pasuk. Rav Moshe Feinstein notes in his Darash Moshe that you see that it begins with a singular reference and then transfers into a plural reference, Yavadum V'Niatzuni. And he notes that that's the way it is, that people should recognize that, as we've often emphasized, and all the credit to those of you who are here today in the Beis Medrash, that everyone's behavior affects everyone else, and everyone's a part of the klal, and so you might think, okay, listen, I can do what I want, it just affects me, and it's never true. Bein latav, bein lamutav, if you're going to display an image of indulgence, so then everyone else will get the message, that's okay too. And if you're going to display a message of discipline and of commitment, so everyone else will get that message. Now, just to comment on Zavas Chalav Udvash, it's a familiar idea, but it's an idea that provokes a whole discussion the Gemara has in the beginning of Bechoros on the Vav Medvez. The Gemara tries to figure out whether or not milk is mutter, or how should we know that milk is mutter? If one wants to just eat fleishiks all the time, then that's okay too. But if one's interested in drinking milk, so how do you know that milk is mutter? And the Gemara has a bunch of attempts from different psukim to derive it, and ultimately concludes that this is really the idea, that Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, that the Torah is not going to praise Eretz Yisrael for its non-kosher food. So if it flows with milk and honey, then presumably that milk must be kosher. So what exactly is the issue with milk? You know, nowadays there are new issues with milk. As Rav Schechter has noted, Lagabe, the integrity of the cows and the like, not the moral integrity, the physical integrity of the cows, but there are other questions, right? So what classically is possibly an issue with milk? So it's a question, first of all, is it originally dam, is therefore should be prohibited for that reason? Another possibility is that it's a yotze min ha'isser, because the cow is alive, and therefore is an eino zvucha, is not shechted, so should that be a problem? Since you couldn't eat the cow as is, why should you be able to eat the milk? Or maybe it should be an issue of Eiver Menachai. So there's a number of different possibilities you find in the Gemaras and in the Rishonim, a bunch of different possibilities as to what exactly is the nature of the issue. And there are probably ramifications. Among, if you want to break them down into two groups, it's also a question of whether the milk itself should be usher for some reason, or that the cow is usher, again, alive, etc. And therefore we should prohibit milk as yotze min ha'isser, or something along those lines. So there's a lot to say about this. Rav Asher Weiss has a little essay about this topic. And this short aliyah, these are five psukim, happens to be the Rav Asher Weiss has two long essays within these five psukim, so we'll try to make mention of both of them. But one of the points he notes is that the Chassam Sofer raises a question that, and this you find in other contexts as well, that maybe we should say paradoxically that Jews are allowed to drink milk and non-Jews are not. Why? Because if it's an issue of Eivir Menachai, so Eivir Menachai is one of the Shavuot Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, is a prohibition for non-Jews also. So if we say, well, it really is Eivir Menachai, but we have this pasuk Eretz Zavos Chalav U'Dvash, that tells us that it's okay, so then the stomach, that's a chiddush for Jews who have the Torah, but not for non-Jews. So if it's really, in its essence, Eivir Menachai, so then that should be prohibited for non-Jews, and it should be left that way. So, good luck making that case in public, but go in front of the United Nations and say, this is your new mission, your court of some sofer. But he has, Rav Asher Weiss here has a very interesting response to it. But Donnie, you want to comment?
Cool. What about Abraham? Doesn't he serve milk?
So that's one of the sources also. Now, it's still a little, that is Taka of the Gemara quotes that as one of the possible sources.
But I'm saying that for, if Avram was assuming that they were Aravim, then...
Right. So we know, so that should be the, like a pasuk, you're asking? We know that milk really is mutter for non-Jews.
So the question is why? Show you that, well, if Avram was certain, wouldn't that be Lifnei Iver for, well, I guess that's a little complicated, Lifnei Iver for
Well, it's interesting, yeah. You know, and there's also, I mean, I'm asking about the Basar B'Chalav because... Yeah.
Well, not only Basar B'Chalav, I'm just saying Chalav.
Right.
If you were saying that Chalav was not mutter for non-Jews.
So my question is, do you want to use that as a raya, as the source, or as a question?
I want to use that
Because as a source, the Gemara Taka looks at it, but you're saying maybe it shouldn't be enough of a source.
No, but I'm saying it should be a source for non-Jews, because I think...
It should be the source. That itself could be the marker.
Yeah,
it goes back to the Noah. Could be. Otherwise, you could say it's maybe a question, except that we'll grant the Metzius that they actually are allowed to drink milk, but the question is why. See, here's a very interesting distinction. You know, by the way, we have a similar question that Gemara talks about and others talk about whether non-Jews can eat the stomach of a cow, because that also should be Eivir Menachai, because when you shech the animal, so the stomach is detached before the animal dies. So, like a millisecond before, but before the animal actually dies, that's what Shechita does.
That's true for any animal.
Right. So, you say, okay, in a chanami. So for Jews, we know that we have a din of Shechita, and we know that that's how it works. Shechita is matir. So, we don't have to worry about the order in which the parts are separated and the animal dies, because Shechita is going to have that effect. But maybe if you don't have a chiddush of shrita, non-Jews don't have to have shechted animals, so they can shoot the animal. So maybe everything has to be deceased before, everything has to, cannot be removed before the animal is deceased. So that's a question of itself. So here the question is bigger, what about all of milk? So Rav Asher Weiss suggests, I think it's very interesting, and this opens up all kinds of other questions, you know what, in general, it's a whole philosophical, halachic question. So we know that the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach are all included within the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. It's an axiom of faith. Basically, the Gemara said, it's called an axiom of faith, but it's a principle the Gemara has. I mean, it's a little bit, it goes to, what I mean by calling it an axiom of faith is that it's a pretty big yesod, because the assumption is that Kedushas Yisrael adds on more responsibilities, doesn't take away, doesn't make things permitted that shouldn't otherwise be permitted unless they are themselves matters of Kedusha. So to hear, it's hard to imagine that, oh, non-Jews are not allowed to drink milk and Jews are, and we have this kula. It's hard to imagine hashkafically, and halachically it's problematic. But the question is also, if we say that all the Sheva Mitzvot are included in the 613, so does that mean that they're the same dinim, or is it possible that they're fundamentally different from each other, even if they're the same din? So he wants to suggest that Eivir Menachai for non-Jews and Eivir Menachai for Jews are two separate concepts. Conceptually, they're two separate things. Even though they boil down to the same idea, but they have two separate themes behind them. That when it comes to Bnei Noach, Eivir Menachai is about Achzarias. It's about Tsar Balei Chaim. To rip an animal off of a, rip a limb off of a living animal and to eat it without shechting it, that's cruel. So that's why it's prohibited for everyone, prohibited for Bnei Noach also. But for Jews, it's a different concept. It's a prat in Nevela, that basically you have to shech the animal before you eat it. So if you were going to rip off its leg while it was still alive, so then it's a Nevela, it's a non-shechted animal. So therefore, not every din of Eivir Menachai that could theoretically apply to Yisrael will apply to a Ben Noach. Because here, let's say, for example, milking the cow, Adrab, if you don't milk the cow, the animal is more miserable. So milking the cow is not an act of achzari, it's just because it's technically coming from a living animal. That doesn't fit in with the theme of Eivir Menachai as understood for non-Jews. Now here, I think also it's important to point out that this distinction only works because we still have Tsar Balei Chaim for Jews, for sure. It's just not necessarily focusing on this concept. Because otherwise, again, if we were Chalila come to the conclusion that, oh, non-Jews have to be careful not to be cruel to animals, but Jews are allowed to, that would be very problematic. So that's not what we're saying here. Tsar Balei Chaim clearly has its own sources. Just parenthetically, while we're quoting Rav Asher Weiss, he has a whole other essay where he talks about that, and he says there's so many different sources that could be the source for Tsar Balei Chaim in the Torah in general, that this is an evidence of the principle that he likes to address often of a Ratzon HaTorah, that whether or not we can point to the exact source, it's clear the Ratzon HaTorah is that nobody should be cruel to animals. And what exactly is the marker, we could debate, but it's a general Torah attitude. So for sure, that applies to Jews and to non-Jews. The only question is, this prat of Eivir Menachai, can we learn out one from the other? Maybe not, because maybe they have two different mechanisms behind them. That for Bnei Noach, it's about Achzarius, and if there's no Achzarius, like milking a cow, it should be okay. And for Jews, it's about Nevela and Taka, even if it's not necessarily connected to something that's cruel, maybe it's still a problem for it to come from a living animal, but then the Pasuk will come and tell us it's okay. Hi.
So it seems like for non-Jews, there's a fundamental reason why it's a sir, but for Jews, it's just a technical reason.
Well, it depends how you define technical. It's a pretty big deal. You know, these are all, and the point I wanted to emphasize a minute ago is that really they would both apply to Jews, because Tsar Balei Chaim exists also for sure. It just comes from different places. So the focus of Eivir Menachai is going to be only on Tsar Balei Chaim for non-Jews, and for Jews it would be both. But since you have a case here where there's no Tsar Balei Chaim involved, milking the cow. So therefore, for non-Jews, it's heter gomer. And for Jews, from Tsar Balei Chaim perspective, it's heter. But there's still a problem that it's like a nevela. So therefore, the pasuk tells us that no, it's not like a nevela.
Is nevela chok, or is there like
a... It's the kind of thing we usually categorize in the chok category. Again, what that means, you know, there is... It's really more of a continuum between what we call chukim, we call mishpatim, really rough categories. Because to say, well, chukim we don't understand, and mishpatim we do understand, so neither statement is totally true, because mishpatim is always much more than we understand. They deal with areas of civil law where we feel like we have a tfisa, but really there's always much more. So every mishpat really has a chok component to it. And chukim also, we still assume that we're supposed to try to figure out what they're about. And so the Sefer HaChinuch, when he has his reasons for mitzvahs, he has reasons for chukim also. Every mitzvah he gives a reason for. So the distinction between chukim and mishpatim is not as absolute as we sometimes make it out to be. It's really more of a continuum that mishpatim we understand more, but not as much as we might think, and chukim we understand less, but not as little as we might think. So within that framework, so yes, kashrus as a whole is generally related to as a chok, but that doesn't mean that you should take that so far as to say that there's nothing to speculate as far as what its reasoning is. Okay, so here then the pasuk says v'dashen. Again, this is an idea that we find throughout the Torah, references to Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat, for example, is probably the most famous example of this, that the Jews will become so overfull that they're going to forget about God. So the Torah Tmima, he has a list of all the places where it says things like that. And he says that really this is a limud zchus. You know, this isn't necessarily meant to be such a terrible condemnation of the Jews as much as it's a limud zchus that when people get very taken in by material benefits, so it's hard for them to be able to stay in the straight path. I think I heard a story once that some sofer maybe was invited by one of the Rothschild family members to come to his house for Shabbos, and he was treated to tremendous luxury and a wonderful spiritual Shabbos as well. And then after Shabbos, Mr. Rothschild said to the Chassam Sofer, said, "What did you think about Shabbos here?" And he was surprised to hear the Chassam Sofer respond, "Everything I saw here was keneged HaTorah. Everything was against the Torah." So he was very taken aback. He tried very hard to be very medactic in mitzvahs the whole Shabbos. So the Chassam Sofer explained, he says, "Yeah, the Torah says, Vayishman Yishurun Vayivat, that the Jews will become wealthy and they're going to kick God, they're going to forget about the Torah. And here I see that you have been so careful not to do that, so it's against the Torah." So Rosh Hashanah Fal Hirsch has a comment here where he goes into some length on this pasuk, and he says that that's the way life is, that people tend to be swayed by tremendous material benefit and to forget about spirituality. But ultimately, redemption is going to involve us being able to balance the two, that ultimately we'll be able to take the material benefit and use it towards serving God. And that's why last week's Parsha Nitzavim, it's almost synergy from Aliyah to Aliyah, it's actually the end of Chamishi in Nitzavim, it's very close. So the Torah talks about V'hosircha, you'll have all this extra benefit. And then again says, V'shavta Hashem Elokecha, it talks about returning to God. And it says that's really ultimately what it's going to be about, that even mitoch Ashirus, we will be able to worship God, but in the imperfect, pre-redeemed world, it's a challenge, and that's what these psukim refer to. The next pasuk, pasuk Chaf Aleph, is also a pretty scary thought. We're not getting happier yet. V'hoya kisim se'ena oso ros rabos v'tzaros. And it will happen that they'll find many rabos v'tzaros. Not going to be so great. V'onsa hashira hazos. So this shir will respond. What exactly does that mean? I'm going to leave for a second because we'll see there's a couple of possible interpretations. Here, the literal translation is V'ansa Shira Zos Lefon of Le'ed is going to be a witness against the situation, because it's going to refer to the eternality of the Torah. And here's this key line, Kilos Shachach Mi Pizarro Ki Yadaiti Es Yitzray Asher Hu Osa Hayom B'Tarim Av Yenu El Aris Asher Nishbaiti. So God says, I already know what their Yetzer is like, and this Shira will be here as a testimony that the Torah will not be forgotten. So there's a lot of mixture of ideas here, right? What's going to happen? So bad things are going to happen. This song will come and testify. The Torah will not be forgotten, and I know about their Yetzer Hara. So these are seemingly conflicting ideas. A lot of different thoughts going around in this pasuk. So the idea of Raus Rabos Vitzaris, the Gemara in the beginning in Chagiga and Daf Hei, tells us that Rabbi Yochanan would cry at this pasuk. At this pasuk specifically, we just had Kisavo 2 weeks ago with all the terrible things, but this he really would cry out apparently, and he said, can you imagine what could be worse than an Eved whose master is going to cause tzaras for him? So that's an interesting question, why this is such a focus. So Yosef Lev Block, who's a Telzer Yeshiva, commented that the issue that he's focusing on is that if you break a law of the United States, so then the government will put you in jail. The government will punish you for breaking the law. But here, we talk about mitzvahs and averas, so we say, schar mitzvah mitzvah, and an avera, kereres avera. It's that the reality is that the mitzvah is inherently good, and if you don't do the mitzvah, you're lacking that good. And if you do, then ultimately you will be pulled into more, and vice versa. So the averas themselves are their own punishment. You know, having that as a part of your spiritual makeup that's its own issue, and therefore that's something that we have to be aware of and to feel just how intense that is. The Ramban has a comment over here on the idea Ki Yadayti Yisitzro, the pasuk ends with. The Ramban says that we know, say, in Parshas Bereishis, the Torah says Ki Yitzer Leif Adam Ra Min Urav, that there is an inclination within the person to sin and to stray. But here it's worse because we know what happened in the Midbar. We know the Jews have sinned. So Ramban says that the reason this pasuk speaks bivados, that someday the Jews will stray and this is what's going to happen, is because we've already seen that they have taken that potential of the Yetzer Hara and made it actual. Had it just been potential, then this would have not been spelled out so explicitly. But because we know that this is what has happened in the past, so therefore the pasuk states it more explicitly, and that's along the lines, this comment also, that the Aveira brings about its own status, and that's a big problem. So again, there's just a bunch of different themes in this pasuk all mixed together. So V'ansa Hashira Hazos, I mentioned, the way to translate that is a little bit mysterious, because it has a couple of possible interpretations. So in some midrashim, it reads a little differently, and it says that when these bad things will happen, and you will be saved from them. So you'll have a crisis, and you'll survive the crisis, and you will then respond with Shira. So you will respond with Hallel, it sounds like. So this provokes the question, this is the second topic that Rav Asher Weiss has in this Aliyah essay about, the question of, is Hallel to be understood as a mitzvah d'oraisa? So that's a question in general. It's a big question in the Rishonim. That the Rambam, in the first Shorash of Sefer HaMitzvahs, quotes the Bahag, who maintains that Hallel is a Daraisa, and he disagrees. He maintains that Hallel is Drabbanan. That's also what he says in Hilchos Chanukah and Perikim Malachavav. And the Ravid there disagrees. The Ravid quotes a Pasuk in Yishayo, it's in Perik Lamed, Pasuk Chavtes, that seems to make a reference to Hallel. And therefore, he says, the Ravid, that that's Midivrei Kabbalah. We discussed the concept of Divrei Kabbalah recently. Mm-hmm. Midivrei Kabbalah doesn't have to do with mysticism. It means that it comes through a pasuk that's post-Pentateuchal. The pasuk is in Nevi'im and Ksuvim, so then it's a pasuk, but it's not from the Torah itself. So then it has a status the Gemara calls Divrei Kabbalah. And some of the Acharonim, most well-known, the Turiyevin, the author of the Shagas Aryeh, maintain that Divrei Kabbalah has a status like a Dimana Torah, for all intents and purposes. That's based on a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which has a line in a very, very specific context, Divrei Kabbalah ki Divrei Torah Dami. So that Gemara is really talking in a very narrow setting, but Turiyevin and others after him understood it to mean that, for all intents and purposes, Divrei Kabbalah, like Divrei Torah, Ramachmir on Divrei Kabbalah. So the Ravid says, Hallel me Divrei Kabbalah from that pasuk. And the Smach, the Smach, Sefer Mitzvahs Katan, and Mitzvahs Asay Kuf Mem Vav, says that it's actually a din min haTorah from the pasuk in Dvarim Perik Yud, Vehi Sila Secha. So, and he includes within that both on Yontif and for personal Nisim, which would seem to be two categories of Hallel. Which is interesting. So Rav Asher Weiss, in his essay, notes that it's hard to square that with the context of the source. So he thinks that to say it's Daraisa there must mean that this is what we call Davar HaMasur L'Chacham, Masur HaKasur L'Chachamim. Familiar with that concept? That the most famous example of this is Chol HaMoed, so it's a little bit Nyan HaDiyoma, that there are Nyanim which are from the Torah itself, but the details of the Torah, the details of the commandment from the Torah are not spelled out, are not even formed, and it's given to Chachamim to create the parameters. So this might be an example, according to this Smach, if that's really to be the source for Hallel, it's hard to see how the source supports all the Pratim that he's talking about, personal Hallel, Yontif Hallel. So you'd have to say that this is something that the Chazal then determined, working off the idea from the Torah. The Ramban, in his Hasagas to the Ramban draws distinction. He says that when it comes to Yontif, so he thinks that it's Min HaTorah. but how minatara, how adyantif is minatara. And then he says there's either two possible ways to explain that. So one is that it's a detail of Simchas Yontif, so that keeps up our synergy with that concept that we're going to talk about Simchas Yontif nowadays. Or it's not connected to any explicit theme, but rather it's an idea, halacha l'moshe misinai. But still, again, minat Torah. While the Magen Mishnah says in Hilchos Chanukah that the personal halal for an ace, that's midivrei Kabbalah. And again, you got to square that with the sources. That's how he understands it. Rashi seems to hold that halal is minat Torah because the Kapos Tamarim points out in the Sefer on Sukkah that the Gemara says, the Mishnah says that women are paturis from halal. So why are women paturis from halal? What reason is there to pata them? So mitzvah seisha is mangrama. So Rashi's shita is a mysterious shita in general. Rashi's shita in Masechus Brachos and Daf Chav is that mitzvah seisha is mangrama is only a patur for mitzvahs daraisa and not for mitzvahs darabana, which is a fascinating topic in of itself. God willing, this year we hope to get to mitzvah seisha is mangrama in Kiddushin. So we'll talk about it in that context. So for now, we'll just leave it at that. But he says therefore Rashi l'shitaso would have to hold that halal is Daraisa, but it's also how it comes out from his position in Psachim and Daf Lamed Vav Mid Aleph that there he maintains the drasha of lechem that matzah is lechem oni lechem sha'onim olav dvarim harbe. So that's apparently a drasha gemurah, real drasha in the Torah, and Rashi explains over there that it means you recite halal over it. So apparently, again, Rashi's understanding that halal is minat Torah. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva in Yerideya in Reish Lamed Gimel, where he's talking about Halal and Chanukah and the like, and he suggests that maybe there's a din minat Torah of Halal because it's Kal V'Chomer that if we have an obligation of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim to recite something, so it's based on a Gemara that we should say Ma Mi Avdus L'Cheiris. That if you're freed from slavery, so we say something. So too, if we're freed from destruction, Kal V'Chomer, we should say something. This idea that Chassam Sofer has, so once darshaned in a different context, maybe we'll talk about this Hanukkah time, but I think it also reflects a position that there is inherent an understanding, Minat Torah, that one will have a Hakar Satov for the Nisim and the Flos that are in his life, and that's not even something you need from the Torah itself. It's like a prerequisite for the Torah, that our ability to appreciate the Torah itself is because we have that kind of recognition. Okay, so just to try to get two more quick points out here. So first of all, this line, Kilosi Shachach Mipizaro, so you can understand this is a very important principle of Emunah, and this is something which has held the Jewish people throughout all these centuries of tremendous tribulation. It's been pointed out by many who were directly involved in such things, such as the Panavizhurav. Panavizhurav was one of the great heroes of making sure the Torah was not forgotten, coming from Europe and setting up a magnificent institution of Torah in Eretz Yisrael, and so much more, so much in his history where he was a direct participant in making sure the Torah is not forgotten. So he noted, you can understand this two ways, and you can understand it to mean that there will, to a statement which seems to be kind of saying at least, you know, that whatever will happen, but at least the Torah will not be forgotten. And Rashi comments, the Gamri won't be totally forgotten, meaning something will happen, but there'll be always this ember of the Torah that will survive. So you can understand that two ways. You can understand that to mean that a lot of Jews will forget the Torah, but there'll always be some who don't. There'll always be something. Or that maybe we're talking about every individual, that no matter how much a individual Jew may be removed from the Torah, he's never going to be completely removed. There's always going to be something there that can be revived, and that's the point. The Yad Shaul, Yosef Shaul Nathanson, is the author of the Tshuva Shaul Meshav, who wrote the trillion Tshuvas. So he literally, try to count this, it's like he wrote a lot of Tshuvas. But it's Efron Chumash. The Yad Shaul, so he notes that you can tell the Torah is never going to be forgotten because we have Bechira Chafshis to do the right thing. And we also have the idea, it's also a Gemara in Kedushin, which you'll all see through your Bechias initiatives, that the Torah is the antidote for the Yetzer Hara. And that this is also a theme I think we've spoken about during the Tshuva Me'ava through Talmud Torah. So if we have Bechira to do the right thing, we have Bechira to fight the Yetzer Hara, and Torah is a crucial tool in that, so we have to assume it'll always be around for us, it'll always be available for us. And this Sefer Ohel Moshe, he has a more than 20-page essay on this one phrase. And again, talking, it's interesting reading, talking about the whole history of all the persecution of the Jewish people from all the past 2,000 years, and how the Torah has always found a way to survive, and how the yeshivas have always been rebuilt in all the stages in history. And he mentions here is a famous line that say in the name of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. It's a very well-known statement. Perhaps you've heard this, that he had said that the last outpost of Torah in the world before the redemption, and of all the God, the Torah was removed and replaced and removed and replaced and always found somewhere to flourish, said that the last outpost of Torah in the world before the redemption will be America. And that he doesn't know exactly what form it will take, he doesn't know what challenges there will be in America and what will the impact be, but that there will be a flourishing of Torah in America, and that will be the last pre-redemption outpost of the Torah. So I think we can take pride in the fact that together with that prophecy, so this is the yeshiva in which his descendants taught. This is the Torah outpost which has such impact on Torah learning throughout the world and throughout America, and Reb Chaim Volozhiner's descendants, Soloveitchik, Vitorsky, and others, this is where they made their Makom Torah, so that's also something to just think about and to focus on. So this next pasuk, so the next actually the next three psukim, so we'll just read them together and then I'll let you go to lunch. Avayichtav Moshe Sashira Hazos B'yom Ahu V'yalamdes B'nei Yisrael. So Moshe wrote the whole Torah then. It's a whole question whether this is the day that he died, the day before he died, or it's Shabbos. That's all. It's a question we'll leave for another time. Vayitzavis Yoshua ben Nun v'yomer chazak v'amatz ki ata tavi es b'nei Yisrael el ha'aretz asher nishbaiti lehem v'anochi ha'imach. So he gave Yoshua extra chizuk, and he said ki ata tavi es b'nei Yisrael, you're going to bring the Jews into Eretz Yisrael, and I will be with you. So he gave him chizuk, but the Gemara comments that it says ki ata tavi earlier in the parsha, it says ki ata tavo. So is there a difference between Kiyata Tavi, Espere Yisrael, and Kiyata Tavo? So apparently yes. So there it means you will, with all the Zakenim with you. That was what Moshe was saying. And here, this is God speaking. And God says, Kiyata Tavi means just you by yourself. Because the Jewish people can only have one leader and can't have many different leaders. So it's you alone. So is this a contradiction to what Moshe said? Moshe got it wrong. So Moshe said, you and the Zakenim, and God comes back later and says, actually, just to be clear, he didn't know what he was talking about. It sounds like from the Medrash that Moshe didn't hear this, by the way. That was a whole discussion that that Moshe was separated from Yeshua when Akash Baruch Hu conveys this to him. It's another whole...
Is that the story with...
the Kinnah.
Where Moshe asks, so what did Hashem
right,
say to you?
Exactly, right. So Moshe asks Yeshua what was said, and Yeshua doesn't tell him, so some Mefarshim suggest he didn't tell him because of this. I think Rav Schwab talks about this in a Sefer, that Yeshua didn't answer because it seems like God was contradicting him. So Pnei Kvodo Shel Moshe, he didn't tell him, actually Moshe, he got it a little bit wrong. But that's hard to say that Moshe got it wrong, because first of all, the whole thing was he was doing Mipia Gvur anyway, so why wasn't making it up on his own, so why is there a difference? So the Brisker Rav suggests, and Rav Goldwicht, Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht, who's the Talmud of the Brisker Rav, has this also in a Sefer, in Parshas Pinchas, if you want to know where to look, not this week's Parsha, but explains that there's two dinim. So this is very much those who were with us last year when we were learning Masechet Sanhedrin, and especially the beginning of Sanhedrin. That's taka where this Gemara is, like we said, but this is a big Sanhedrin issue, is that Moshe had two roles. So Moshe was the head of the Sanhedrin, and he was also the Melech. So Yehoshua was appointed to take over in both roles. And the first reference was to be as the head of the Sanhedrin. So that, the head of the Sanhedrin, is the first among equals. He has to make his decisions together with everyone else. So that is with everybody. And here he's saying, as a melech, so as far as being a king has advisors, but ultimately it's his call. He doesn't take a vote. He does what he thinks he should do after listening to his advisors. So therefore, here it's singular as opposed to the earlier reference where it was about the Sanhedrin. So it's not that one was wrong and one was right. They're both truths to different components. The Taz has a comment that here he's saying that you're in charge, but you should take advice, which again is not fundamentally different points. And then the Aliyah just ends with this pasuk that Vahi, appropriate pasuk to end on, Vahi kechalos Moshe luchtov esdivrei haTorah hazos al sefer ad tumam. So Moshe finished writing everything down, and the Foshim point out here that here and together with other psukim, so you have really a reference to both Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, and their intertwining and their integrity together. All right, so that's an appropriate place to stop, just in time to go upstairs. It's 1 floor up.